This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Om Sadam to our listeners. Welcome to Saturday News number 1141. In these 3 weeks, we'll be hearing a talk between two ex-students, Brother Prem and Arvind of Saturday News in Prasanthi. They're having a discussion in the glory of Lord Krishna. So it will be in three parts. So today we'll be hearing part one. I offer my most loving and humble pranams at the Lord's feet of our beloved Bhagwan, Sri Satya Sai Baba. And we get straight into part one on the topic of Lord Krishna.
Lord Krishna is a million faceted diamond, if we can call it that way. And in every angle, in every way we view, we see beauty, we see the sparkle, we see a lesson, we see an insight. But more than anything else, we find a lot of joy. So in order to derive that joy, we have decided to dedicate this afternoon satsang in the glories of Lord Krishna.
I don't know whether you've heard of this speaker. Her name is Prema Pandurangan, right?
Ah, yes, I've heard.
She's a very famous Bhagavatam speaker, and she's spoken, I think, a couple of times in Swami's presence during one of the summer courses. She says this very often when she speaks about Bhagavatam. And she says, you know, Rama you can respect. Lord Rama you can look up to. Rama can be worshipped. But to love, you need Krishna. She says, Krishna you can love because he is part of you. You know, you see the manifestation of all your mischief and all your lightheartedness in him. In fact, he's the embodiment of everything put together. I think in one of the discourses Swami gave, maybe in 2005 or 6 during Janmashtami, Swami said the very stories of Krishna can fill you with joy. It's something which is spontaneously gives joy, and that's what Lord Krishna's life is all about. And as you said, so much filled with the, you know, messages. It's so obvious, and something which somebody was telling once when they were talking about the Ramayana. You know, Ramayana came in a period where people had a little advanced understanding from their intelligence point of view. So that's why most of the lessons were subtle, actually, where you had to look into it to understand what the lessons were. But comparatively, not completely, but comparatively, the lessons in the Krishna Avatar are pretty more obvious than in the Rama Avatar, where, you know, Swami had to go into and say that these stand for the Vedas and this stands for the three gunas and all that. But in the Krishna Avatar, sometimes, you know, it's derived. Lessons are all derived, and the distilled lesson is given to you, where through the Bhagavad Gita, where he clearly says, you know, what is spirituality? How do you lead a life? How do you follow your dharma? And everything is clearly said. That's why most often we find it so much more easier to relate to Lord Krishna.
In terms of following commands, you know, it makes me think, as we have evolved, you know, as time has passed, they say all animals, including man, is evolving. I feel that while man has evolved in terms of IQ, the IQ has kept growing, the SQ or the spiritual quotient has probably decreased. And that's what even our scriptures say, that from Krita Yuga or Satya Yuga to Kali Yuga, there's a decline in the SQ, spiritual quotient. And probably that is the reason why, if we look at the Satya Yuga, we have so many Amshavatars, the descent of the Lord for a very brief period in time. There is no elaborate birth, growth and nothing like that. You know, if you see Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Narasimha, Vamana, it is, you know, in the, as the Yugas progress and as it becomes more and more difficult to practice spirituality,
right,
that is where the avatars also come in more completeness. In the sense, Krishna is considered as the first Purna avatar. Before that, it's all only parts. So in that sense, how blessed and lucky we are that we have found both Rama and Krishna in our Swami. We have found the gambhiryam of Rama in him and the playfulness and mischief of Krishna in him. It is indeed a blessing, and probably that is the speciality for the Kali Yuga, that though spiritual quotient is the least, it has attracted the most powerful and most beautiful, sweet, charming avatar. You were mentioning as to how the stories of Krishna are beautiful, and I feel it gets even more beautiful when we listen to the same story narrated by Swami. In a discourse that Swami gave to all the students at Vrindavan in the dining hall, it was a private discourse. It is recorded in Satya Sai Speaks though. Such a beautiful one. In that, Swami mentions that Krishna's birthday is not according to the solar calendar. It doesn't come every year on the same date. But it comes on the same day when all the celestial positions of the planets and the stars and everything is exactly the same. Because that is how the Indian calendar would mark the birthday. It would mark it based on the repetition of celestial events. So every time that combination comes, that is the day to be celebrated. And that's why we will see many of the Indian festivals do not exactly fall on the same day every year. Deepavali, Krishnashtami, Ganesh Chaturthi, all these depend on this celestial phenomena and are not based on the solar calendar. And Swami says that. So I just feel that it would be wonderful that we go through Krishna's life, Krishna's birth, exactly in the manner that Swami revealed on that beautiful day, the 5th of
September 1977. Very true. Talking about that particular Janmashtami, I think though the Janmashtami fell on 5th of September, the discourse we are talking about was delivered on the 6th of September. Because there is that beautiful incident which some of our teachers who are still with us, you know, who are part of that celebration share with us. Apparently it was the 5th of September, the Janmashtami day, and Swami was not in Vrindavan on that particular day, and they were all celebrating it without Swami's physical presence there. And just as they were celebrating, that evening was going through, they heard the familiar honking of Swami's car, because those days the drivers who used to go with Swami, they had this way of hinting to the boys ahead of time that Swami is coming. I think it's so beautiful to recollect. There used to be a bridge on the way to the Vrindavan Ashram when you come from Puttaparthi side.
Yes.
There's a small culvert kind of a bridge which is there.
Correct.
Right. And even as you would come there, there would be a peculiar kind of honking. And that would be a hint to the boys, and boys would come out running. So that's when they came, and Swami came, and then Swami said, oh, today is Janmashtami, but the day is almost over. Let's celebrate it tomorrow. And on that particular day, Swami came to the hostel dining hall, and this discourse which we are referring to was very, very profound discourse and very beautifully detailed discourse Swami gave in the dining hall on the 6th of September.
So 6th of September 1977. And you know, in that Swami begins by talking about the birth of Krishna. It's so beautiful. If you see the Ashtami or the eighth day, you know, we have Saptami, Ashtami, Navami, Dashami. That is how the days are counted. It goes up to 14 days because the lunar calendar has 14 days of the waning phase of the moon, 14 days of the waxing phase of the moon. So accordingly we have Ekadashi, Dwadashi, like that. Among these days, the eighth day, the Ashtami day, is considered as unlucky. It's considered as a day on which no new venture is started, nothing, you know, people don't do anything usually on this day. They don't start on a journey on this day. And it is interesting that Lord Krishna chose to be born on such an Ashtami. It shows that where the Lord is concerned, you know, all these rules just wither away. Because the Purnavatar, the most profound, most impact-making avatar, if we can call it that way, took birth on an Ashtami day. And Lord Krishna also happened to be the eighth child for Devaki. And if we see the Dashavatar, the 10 avatars of Vishnu, Lord Krishna happens to be the eighth avatar also. All these combinations of eight. And Swami gives a very profound meaning for this. He says, eight symbolizes the final step in the Ashtanga Yoga. There's the Ashtanga Yoga, the eighth step path to yoga, in which the eighth step is Samadhi. And so Swami says, Krishna symbolized the ultimate in yoga. That's why he's called Yogishwara, the Lord of Yoga. That is the interpretation and meaning that Swami gives for Krishna being born on Ashtami day as the eighth child, as the eighth avatar.
Interestingly, even as you speak about Ashtami, I remember when I was a student once, Professor Venkatraman was supposed to speak before Swami's discourse on a Janmashtami day.
Okay.
And he made reference to this very fact that, you know, we consider Ashtami as very inauspicious, but Krishna was born on Ashtami, and he, you know, put it forth in a way that the inauspiciousness of Ashtami was removed by the birth of Krishna. Right? And the best part was when Swami followed it up with this discourse, Swami said, you know, Venkatraman said this, but it's not true. Look at Krishna's life. Because he started his avatar on an Ashtami, his life was filled with difficulties. You know, Swami said that, you know, in his childhood, and he was born in a prison and all that, Swami said, the beautiful thing which Swami was saying is, you know, there is no need to be scared of an inauspicious day or inauspicious time, or for that matter, even the difficulties one would face in life. That is what Krishna came to show, that, you know, I went through all these difficulties, but still I came out, you know, the victor in every situation. And that was the message which Swami wanted us to take. You know, don't overlook the troubles which come your way, but realize that you are strong enough to overpower them.
And the word samadhi, you know, in itself gives us a hint as to how we should do this in a face of troubles or all the obstacles that come in our life. Because Swami says, people think samadhi means eyes are closed and you are, you know, like almost a comatose stage where you are not doing anything other than just breathing and your heart is beating. But Swami says that is not the meaning of samadhi. In this Ashtanga Yoga, which starts as Yama, Niyama, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Asana, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. He says this Samadhi is broken into Samadhi, which means equanimity. So
Dhi
Swami
means,
says...
Right, Dhi means Buddhi or intelligence. So Samadhi.
Meaning
what, right.
An intellect which is equanimous.
Balanced and equanimous.
Balanced. And that is what, you know, even in the Gita, Lord Krishna later on says, Sukha Dukke Same Kritva Labha Labhav Jaya Jayo. He explains to Arjuna that, Arjuna, the one who is dearest to me is one who is equanimous in the face of Sukha and Dukha, which is joy and sorrow, Labha and Alabha, which is profit and loss,
right.
Gain and loss, Jaya Jayo, in victory and defeat. So, I think, just like Swami says, my life is my message, even Krishna, if you see, he exactly stated this, because while he is preaching everyone to be equanimous, it is not as if he chose a rosy life for himself. He chose apparently the worst kind of circumstances to be born, just to show that if you have equanimity, that's it. Everything gets taken care of, everything gets balanced, and nothing will ever affect you. Krishna definitely practiced what he preached. In fact, that is, as Swami said that day in the discourse, that is the reason why Krishna possibly chose a day like Ashtami, which is bound to give all kind of ill luck and bad fortune to you. He chose such a day just to show that if you have equanimity and take everything in the right spirit, you emerge victorious, you emerge as the Supreme Lord himself.
Right, and Swami goes on to refer to that incident. Of course, we won't go into the details because we presume that most of us know the story of Krishna pretty well, where he's born in the prisons of Mathura, where Kamsa is imprisoned, the parents of Lord Krishna, Vasudeva and Mother Devaki. And that is when, you know, Kamsa is waiting for that eighth child to be born, and because he's been told that this is the child which is going to be his nemesis. So he's waiting for that child to be born. And at that moment, these two parents, mother and father, who are imprisoned in that prison, they are chained. But when this child is born, surprisingly, all the guards are, they kind of blank out and none of them are awake to even listen to this child birth happening. But after the child is born, when Vasudeva picks up this child, the fetters which are binding the Vasudeva just fall away. And he gets this instruction that he's supposed to take this child to Vrindavan across the Yamuna River. But Swami refers to this particular incident and he says that, see, this is very symbolic. When Vasudeva lifted Lord Krishna, when the Lord was embraced, the chains which bound him fell away. This was the message which Lord Krishna was giving at his very birth. That's one point which Swami makes in that discourse.
That's a real beautiful point, you know, and it seems so apt and perfect, and it makes me wonder, why is it that nobody ever thought of this before this discourse when Swami said that? He says that, you know, the minute he picks up Krishna, all the chains fall away. And if we see, when he comes back, he drops Krishna at Gokula and he comes back. When he comes back, the chains come and bind him again, you know.
Right.
It's almost as if you embrace the Lord and you get Jivan Mukti. You're freed in the true sense. You're liberated even though you reside in the body. Let go of the Lord and you get chained. Not only that, Swami goes on to say in the discourse that as Vasudeva walks, raindrops fall which soften the earth. And he says that the guards who are standing at the prison doors, they are lost in a kind of ecstasy, and therefore they are totally oblivious to this prisoner walking out comfortably from the prison. At the same time, Swami also says that the river Yamuna parts and gives way for Nanda to walk. Not Nanda, I mean for Vasudeva to walk with Krishna before he can drop it off as Nanda's home. So Swami says that, you know, once you embrace the Lord, not only are you freed, everything works to ensure success for you. The whole universe will conspire to help you to succeed, because the universe is nothing but a slave, a servant to the Lord.
Right, Robin. I think each avatar has a very, very beautiful way of unfolding. It's, we're fortunate to go through that of Lord Rama, where we saw the different circumstances in which his avatar happens. But again, this is so very beautiful, and it's, you know, so many questions of how the Lord chooses those who will be instrumental in his avatarhood. You know, if he really had to be brought up in Gokula, why wouldn't he be born there? Why should he be born to Mother Devaki and Vasudeva here and be taken there and be brought up there, when he could, even as a child, ward away all the negative forces which try to, you know, kill him as a child? He could have done it even in the prison. I think it's so beautiful that the whole plot is the way it is, and we get a chance to go through it. And so wonderful that after so many years, Swami is here to show us, you know, as we said, the Rama avatar is subtle and the Krishna avatar is not as subtle, but Swami probably sees that even this not so subtle message doesn't seem to be penetrating your head, so let me come and explain it to you.
No, I remember, you know, as you said, when Krishna was born in the prison, he was closest to Kamsa, whom he has come to kill. It would have been the easiest geographically to kill him. But in that sense, he could have killed all the demons by just mere will. But the Lord always, in his compassion and love, he knows that the Bhagavatam is something that will enrapture the listener. That many people will develop love for the Lord because of the Bhagavatam. You know, the Bhagavad Gita is the ultimate spiritual treatise, maybe. But people don't readily get attracted to the Bhagavad Gita, because I think everyone needs a level of evolution before you get attracted to the teachings. The same happens with our own Swami, right? None of us came to Swami saying, wow, have you read Satya Sai Speaks? Oh my God, it is phenomenal. There are a few who have come like that, but most have come pulled, drawn by his beautiful physical form, by the miracles that he does. And I think that is the reason why Krishna also in that avatar does so many things in different manner, kills the demons in different manner, so that we get the joy of recounting all that. And apart from getting the joy, also get important lessons. One more beautiful point that Swami makes in that discourse is, he says, whenever the descent is there, with the Lord always comes the Yoga Maya Shakti. Maya has to come. Maya is a definite characteristic trait of the dual world. And therefore, when that Advaitic Lord descends into the Dvaitic world, he has to come accompanied by Maya. And so Krishna too was accompanied by Maya. And in common parlance, the Lord is known as the Purusha and the Maya is known as the Prakriti, or the female aspect. And Swami says that as Krishna took birth in the prison cell, at the same time Yoga Maya also took birth at Gokula to the wife of Nanda. And so Vasudeva goes to Gokula, exchanges the baby, puts Krishna there, picks up Yoga Maya and comes. And Swami says, Yoga Maya immediately performs her duty. How? As soon as she comes, she begins to wail. All the guards are, trance of bliss is broken. Nature suddenly becomes still again. And they go and notify, and it becomes, you know, horrific. Again here, you know, you can understand what Maya does. Maya hides you from the bliss of the Lord. But Maya is a trait of the Lord. And it is Yoga Maya who hurries Kamsa towards his doom, because Kamsa comes, picks up this and thinks this is the eighth child and throws it. But the child escapes and says, the one who is going to kill you is still there, Kamsa. Yoga Maya is like the fun aspect, you know. It doesn't want to leave Kamsa just like that. Let me ruin his sleep some more. So just tell Kamsa, hey Kamsa, you think you're killing me? I'm not dead, okay? Because I'm not the child supposed to kill you. The child supposed to kill you is already safe, growing far away. I think it's the way we see it. Yoga Maya is something that blocks our vision from seeing the true aspect of the Lord. At the same time, it is that which helps us enjoy the mischief and enjoy the humanness of the Lord. So this also Swami points out in that discourse, that Yoga Maya always accompanies the Lord.
And of course, many things which Swami says there probably will come to. One more interesting part which Swami says in that, Swami talks about, you know, when an avatar comes, what is the purpose he comes in? You know, Krishna did not come with his conch and Sudarshana Chakra. That's what Swami says. In fact, one interesting thing, probably not in this discourse, Swami says some other time, is when Sishupala is being killed, where every time he would narrate this incident, he would say that Krishna did not use the Sudarshana Chakra. He takes one of the plates which is there on Tambula and he chops the head of Sishupala with that. So that's one thing which Swami says, that he did not come with his weapons, he did not come with his paraphernalia. Because the Lord comes so that you can relate to him. He comes to give joy, he comes to, you know, become a part of your life and be one with you and give you that joy of communion with him. And Swami went on to say that that's exactly what Krishna did. But unfortunately, people picturize him as, you know, wearing a crown and being bejeweled and all that. Swami said he was a simple cowherd boy. And at that instant, during this discourse, Swami looked at the boys and said, "One of you give me a towel." And our Shivashankar Sai, sir, who shared with us part of the story,
the former warden
of the Parthi campus, right now the
HOD
of the physics department, he ran and he brought a long white towel. And Swami tied the towel around his head, and there's a beautiful picture of that. And Swami said, this is how Krishna wore his turban. He did not have a crown or, you know, started jewel on his head. He just wore the simple turban. And there used to be a lot of peacocks around in Vrindavan those days. And he used
just like in Vrindavan here.
Right, just in Vrindavan here. And he used to just pick up a few feathers which have fallen down for the animal activists. Krishna never plucked the feathers. Swami said that he would pick up feathers, you know, scattered around, and he would tuck it in that turban. That was one beautiful incident which happened. It really is, when we talk about Vrindavan as it stands today, it really played the role of Vrindavan of Krishna's time, isn't it?
Exactly.
There is no end to the amount of stories we can narrate about our Vrindavan, which is in no way less than the Vrindavan we are talking about in Krishna's time.
In fact, it is because of our experience at our Vrindavan that we are able to appreciate better the leelas of Krishna in his Vrindavan. Dear listeners, we will take a short break now. After the break, we will delve into the subject proper. It often happens that we get so lost in our introduction that the introduction becomes quite lengthy. And it is very important that we know the significance of Krishna's birth and what Swami has spoken about it. After the break, we will take up an interesting theme, which is we will pick up pairs which are very, very, very similar in many ways, and yet so different in the way their lives panned out because of the attitude they bore towards Krishna, because of their own ego or because of their own humility. That is definitely going to be interesting. We found it so interesting preparing for this. I'm sure that all of you too will enjoy it.
We are about to begin a very beautiful detailed study of some of the devotees and some of the characters which occur in the life of Lord Krishna. The idea as always is to look at this and see how we can approach our Swami better. We can see what is it that some of these people have done right. What is it that they've got right in their approach to the Lord? And if we could emulate that, that would of course definitely be the underlying idea of this whole process of going through this. Probably we should start right from the birth, you know, because as we said, though Krishna was born to Mother Devaki, we all almost spontaneously think of Mother Yashoda as the mother of Lord Krishna. So here was this one character who was not the mother of Lord Krishna, but who became the mother of Lord Krishna. And there was another character who also had a similar opportunity. That is of the demon or demoness Putana. She comes and she has the opportunity to mother or rather suckle Lord Krishna when he was a little child for those few moments. And I think we were not able to find anything about Mother Yashoda's past, how she landed this, you know, grand opportunity of being the mother of Lord Krishna. But there is a little bit of Putana's past in many of the Puranas.
In the Garga Samhita, which is a work on the life of Krishna, as well as the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, it is written that in her previous birth, Putana was Ratnamala. Ratnamala, the daughter of Bali Chakravarti. And Ratnamala was the daughter of King Bali, and it is said that when she saw Vamanavatar, when she saw Lord Vamana, the tiny little boy, the attraction she felt was immediate and intense. Her motherly instinct got aroused so strongly, and you know, it is said that once a woman becomes a mother, not just her baby. Any baby's cry makes her secrete milk. It so happens like that. Even scientifically, it's a known thing. Even when she's at that stage in life when she has to breastfeed and suckle the baby, say the first few months of the baby's life, in that time, any such cry makes her exude milk. I feel that is possibly the reason why we have this term called the milk of human kindness. Mm-hmm. You know, so it is said that when this Ratnamala saw Vamana, such was the motherly instinct that arose in her. She just felt how wonderful it would be if I have a child like this, you know. And it is in order to fulfill this strong, intense desire of hers that she got the opportunity to actually breastfeed the Lord. But then, you know, later on when she sees what Vamana does to her own father, if you don't know the spiritual significance, if we don't know the background, if we directly look, what actually Vamana does is grows to a huge size and cruelly tramples onto the head of Bali Chakravarti, sending him to the netherworld for eons. Seeing that, she gets very, very angry. And the same person who just felt that she should mother Vamana, she begins to feel that she wants to murder Vamana. And it is said that Krishna knew these because being the Supreme Lord, and therefore he allowed her to fulfill both these desires, to suckle him as well as attempt to take his life when she came in her other birth as Putana.
Right, and that is when she has this opportunity to do both, as you said, in a way. One of the people whom Kamsa sends forth to kill this child Krishna is this Putana, because he comes to know that the child is just born and it must be a toddler still. So she sends forth this Putana, and I think the description according to the Bhagavatam is she claims that she is something like a midwife who has this blessing to confer nutrition and health on any child that she gets an opportunity to suckle. And that's how she comes to Mother Yashoda and says that, you know, you were very old when this child was born to you, and there's a possibility that your milk does not give enough nourishment to your child, and let me do this for this little child. And that's what Swami says, I think even in this discourse we were referring to. Swami describes that dialogue which Putana says, and she immediately, Mother Yashoda gives the child to her, and when she comes with poison smeared on her breast, thinking that when she feeds this child, she would poison the child in the process. But apparently when Lord Krishna starts suckling, she realizes that this child is not an ordinary child. He cannot be killed by her. And she also knows that, you know, it almost flashes in front of her that her destiny is in front of her, as she is not going to be killing this child, but rather this child is going to suck the life out of her. And she very willingly offers herself to him, thinking very, very gleefully, almost like what we spoke about Maricha when we spoke about the Ramayana, where, you know, she says that what a beautiful destiny awaits me, because this child is not only going to drink milk from me, but is going to suck the life out of me. And she offers herself to Krishna.
Sairam listeners, we'll catch up next week on part two.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.